Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. In this week's episode, I'm joined by Marlene van der Berg. Marlene is an occupational therapist and therapeutic team manager at Aikido, Montrose Manor, a specialist eating disorder clinic. Marlene has worked in mental health for over 18 years, working with clients with acute and chronic mental health conditions, eating disorders, addiction concerns, and personality disorders. Marlene also hosts an outpatient support community, Healing Spaces Wellness, and has an interest in group intervention and holistic healing processes. As an occupational therapist, she has a passion about supporting clients to find within themselves the motivation to live fully in all the areas of their lives, to engage in activities and processes that lead to inner and outer well-being, and to encourage them to become their most authentic, healthiest selves. This week, we speak all about the Montrose Manor approach and how this differs from more standard forms of treatment. We speak about how it's really important to understand the purpose of your eating disorders and the struggles that it helps you navigate, and how you can develop skills so that you no longer rely on your eating disorder.
Marlene, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. It's such a pleasure to meet you again and be recording the podcast with you today.
I am really thrilled to be here. I'm actually quite proud of you for having this podcast in the first place. I think that's quite brave. And so to be honored is an absolute honor. So thank you for inviting me and Montrose Manor.
Yeah, no, honestly, it's funny because when you work in the eating disorder world, there's like people that you hear of or organizations and you're like, oh my God, like, you know, imagine having them on the podcast. And I used to work at an eating disorder clinic, and when I'd be like, oh my God, if I ever got anyone from Montrose Manor on the podcast, that'd be absolutely amazing, like all the way over in South Africa. So I am slightly fangirling today, I won't lie.
Oh, it's lovely to hear that. But as you say, we are one big family, and there's so much misinformation, stigma, you know, so much about eating disorders that actually we just should all to work together and helping people get recovery and get their lives back. So absolutely thrilled to be here.
Yeah, amazing. And I guess to start us off, Molly, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
So my name is Madeleine van den Berg. I am an occupational therapist. I've worked in psychiatry for my whole career. And then when we just felt like, right, now it's time to make my life a little bit more complicated, let me dive into the world of eating disorder intervention. That's where I find myself now. So I work at Montrose Manor. We are a 21-bed inpatient facility. We are a therapeutic unit, so our program is a minimum of 6 weeks, 12 weeks, and then we might extend it a little bit longer, so somewhere between around about 12 weeks long. It's a residential program, so really taking a client from starting the process, from really breaking the denial, starting the process of refeeding, starting the process of thinking about letting go of their eating disorders, to really, the word that I'm thinking of now is rehabilitating, like thinking about what did I do for myself that's not working, how can I do that differently, and taking clients right up to reintegration, because in the end, it's not just about giving up your illness. It's really about building a life for yourself. So that's what we do at Montrose. We are in a beautiful setting. I'm looking up at the mountains as we speak. So we're in Cape Town, South Africa. So the setting is beautiful. The people are lovely. And I think the recovery feels, I want to say, real and authentic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, just being in Cape Town, that sounds absolutely idyllic. So I'm very jealous because I'm looking out onto my scummy street in Cambridge. So by the way, you've got a beautiful outlook there. But I think one thing that stood out to me when we chatted before was, I guess, the different approach that you guys take. And I really want to, in a bit, I want to come back to sort of like the rehabilitation and the recovery that you support people with. But I guess to start with, what do you think it is about Montrose Manor that is different to maybe a more classic eating disorder treatment that we might see?
I think for one, our smaller nature, you know, like the fact that we are only 21 clients in the clinic and that our staffing complement is also actually small, is that we operate like a family. We operate like a home. And so, yes, it is a clinic and yes, it is a rehabilitation facility. But I think what our clients often speak about is that I found myself here and I found home here and I found family here, and it gave me a voice that I didn't have. And you can even hear as I'm speaking, I'm already starting to speak about psychodynamic concepts. So the clinic is designed in such a way that we can help you address things that went wrong for you in your life in a very subtle way. Alongside, I always say to clients, you need to push two wheelbarrows at the same time. You need to push your eating disorder recovery, but then you also need to push healing the hurts and the wounding. And I think that's really why Montrose is different, because we try to find a balance in those two wheelbarrows, both practical physical recovery, if you want to call it that, but actually then really doing emotional recovery. And so to come here to South Africa in this beautiful house that we have and really learn to live and to be yourself again, I think is actually what is making this place magical.
I think there's a big thing there in terms of the kind of two types of recovery that we have. I think a lot of the time, maybe in more traditional treatments, we focus a lot on the physical side of recovery in terms of, you know, making sure that people are at an appropriate weight, making sure that people are eating regularly, you know, they're not kind of, they don't have severe medical conditions and that sort of thing. But I think often people are given that treatment and the emotional side of things is kind of neglected. And I've spoken to a lot of people recently who've said, you know, physically I'm fine, you know, whether or not they needed to weight restore, they're living life at a healthy weight and they're eating well, but emotionally and mentally they're still really, really struggling. And it sounds like, you know, a lot of people kind of get to that point of, oh, I'm fine physically, therefore I don't have an eating disorder anymore. I think that's a big stigma in society is as well, like, oh, well, if you're eating fine, then you can't be struggling with an eating disorder anymore. But actually, what you've highlighted there is there's so much kind of underlying things going on that actually the physical side of things is almost like just a small subsection of it. And actually the mental and the emotional bit is the kind of big piece of work.
Absolutely. And I think there you are touching on is that we can't separate emotional recovery from physical recovery. A lot of clients need to weight restore, whether it's up or down. A lot of clients need to build a better relationship with food or exercise, but it is a small subset. And I think that in a lot of treatment, that becomes the big subset, or that becomes the big focus. So 90% of our time is going to your weight and what are you eating and what are you not eating and how many calories you're taking in, where in Montrose that almost forms, I want to say, 20% of our treatment, maybe 30% of our treatment, because it is important and we cannot remove it from general recovery. But if we keep that the focus, then the eating disorder has still more gas to run this machine with, and that's really what you want to shift, is you want to say, let us focus on the stuff that brought you to your eating disorder, and let us focus on how you can get beyond your eating disorder, rather than almost giving you more tools to cherry pick recovery, you know, to be in pseudo recovery. So yes, I'm weight restored, but I've done nothing about the emotional triggers. I've done nothing about the reasons why I have this, why I use this as a coping. I've done nothing really with my relationship with myself, with my body, with my family, my others. And that's really when we get into a tricky position. I think also, and I mean, people get recovery in different ways. Some people white knuckle it through fellowship. Other people go to a clinic. Other people do outpatient treatment. So there's ways for everyone to get recovery. But I think a big part of the problem of focusing on the physical side of recovery is that clients then only come in when they are really physically ill. Or we always move that goalpost of like, I'm not ill enough to get treatment. I'm not ill enough to see a therapist. And by the time that you then get to treatment, you have a very low BMI either, or you are so active in your addictive behaviors that, you know, like you're almost psychotically engaged in them. it takes us a very long time to get you better from that to a space where you can do the RIA. So if we, and I want to say it in quotation marks, almost going like, if we start sooner, if we start when your BMI is not a problem, when we start when we're in a place where your brain is still functioning to a large degree, we're actually in a better position to do therapy.
And I think in an ideal world, that would be perfect. You know, being devil's advocate here, in an ideal world, if people started noticing symptoms of an eating disorder, they'd come along to you and say, yep, I recognise that my relationship with food and body is going down the wrong path and I want some help. But I think the nature of eating disorders is that you don't ever feel sick enough and you don't feel like you need help. So how would you say to people, you know, you do deserve the help, you know, irrespective of whether your BMI is low, if you're struggling with your eating and your body, then there's an issue that we need to solve here.
Well, you've said that, just in that sentence you've said it, because I said it to a family today, is I actually do not care what your weight looks like. Although the client is quite low BMI, I'm like, I'm not really so worried about your weight. If you do what you need to do, your weight will be fine. I am so much more concerned about your mind, about your thoughts, about your compulsive behaviors. So if I were to look at whose body is the illest, most ill, is there even a word like that? It's a ridiculous thing to think about. But if I were to cut you open and take out the thoughts in your brain, I can tell you that you are for sure ill enough. So I'm not sure what you're waiting for, because an eating disorder is a mental illness with the focus on mental illness. Yes, it has physical side effects, but what are we treating here? Are we treating a body, or are we treating a person, of which a body, a mind, a soul, a heart is all just a part of? It would be terrible to just treat one part of a whole big being. We are actually then reenacting trauma. Your eating disorder is reenacting trauma for you.
Yeah. And I think it's a tricky situation. I mean, I don't know what the situation in South Africa is like, but I think because we have got such a shortage of support, we are in a situation where we are having to only support the people that are really physically unwell, because there's not enough support to go around for everybody. So naturally you lean towards the people that are physically unwell, because maybe the risk is more prominent or what have you. But you're so right in the fact that an eating disorder is a mental health condition. And, you know, for me personally, my lived experience is that, yeah, I lost some weight and there has been some physical implications, but by gosh, the mental implications have been so much worse, and they linger as well. You know, I was saying to my therapist a few weeks ago, which she did disagree with me, however, you know, in retrospect, I can't really remember. I said the eating part was the easy part, you know, and she said it actually wasn't the easy part, honey. You've just very nicely blocked that out of your memory. But the unpicking the emotions and understanding the role of the eating disorder and understanding why I can't let go and what it means to me, that's been so much harder than the kind of putting food on the plate and getting it down.
Yes. And I think also if you then start to look at it from this lens, your eating disorder becomes a brilliant tool, because for you that is in recovery. If you have some sort of weird reaction to a meal put in front of you, you immediately go, oh my word, what's going on for me emotionally? You don't know what's wrong with the food or what's wrong with my body, because you're in recovery. So you now almost use your eating disorder as a bit of an alarm system. When the ED voice is loud or the ED behaviors present itself, you can go, hey, that's interesting. What's going on here? Where if we focus on, oh my word, did you lose weight? Why did you not eat this? Why did you skip the snack? What is it going to do to your weight? What is it going to do to your health? Then we're actually... our EDs are happy with that conversation. That might be a very interesting thing to think about, is what kind of conversations make your eating disorder happy? If you have a conversation with your therapist about, oh, I went to this event and that was the food and I spent so much time, and your eating disorder loves that. Your eating disorder does not like you going, you know what, it was really difficult to eat the pizza, but I actually realized that I was feeling socially insecure. I think you're right. I think not only UK or European countries, South Africa included, there's a lot of policy shifts and changes that need to happen. And I'm with you that people that are really, really, really ill and physically in danger need the care. But I also think that we are missing a gap in something like a Montrose Manor that offers a therapeutic input. And it would be wonderful if policies and finances and resources can support actually helping people on the street with a difficult relationship with food, that use food as a coping, whichever way you go, or exercise as a coping. I think we will then have less clients that are really, really physically ill and needing hospital admissions if we shift that focus.
I mean, I think undoubtedly you're right. If we can catch people before they get severe, then obviously, you know, if you just left everybody to get severe, then you've got everybody then needing really intensive support. Whereas if you're able to catch people, then they don't necessarily get to that severe point. I think it's, you know, it's glaringly obvious that's what we need to do. But unfortunately, that in itself takes time, funding and resources to put that in place, which I think is why it is a difficult thing to set up. But once set up, it'd be really helpful. But I wanted to go back to what you were saying about using your eating disorder as sort of an alarm, because I think that is such a brilliant thought process. And I think I've thought about it in a similar way before, but not exactly like that. But I will do that now. If I'm struggling one day, you know, with my body image, or, you know, feeling like, oh, I want to restrict today or whatever, it's then checking in with yourself and being like, oh, why do you want to do that? Like, what's going on for you that means that your body is feeling uncomfortable today? Or what's going on for you meaning that you want to restrict? And I really like that, because it's a lot about, I've gotten to a place where I don't want to necessarily see my eating disorder as a bad guy, because I think, you know, upon reflection, when my eating disorder came back into my life, it was at a time where I didn't feel like I had support around me to navigate things I was struggling with. And so the eating disorder came in, it was like, I can provide you that support. And at the time, it felt like that was the only thing I could rely on. And obviously, it's not a great coping mechanism, but it did get me through what I was going through. It's now that I'm in a better place where I can actually learn healthier coping mechanisms that you think, okay, the eating disorder can go to the side now, and I don't need that. And thank you for your time, but, you know, I've got other coping mechanisms now. But so important to have that reframe of, I think something might be going on here. You know, maybe unpack that, explore that a little bit, rather than, like you say, just focusing on, I think that was a really important point, what you said as well, like, you know, the eating disorder will love you to be like, oh yeah, there was pizza and I couldn't eat it, because it was all that focus on food, but it's also a distraction from whatever the issue actually is. So if the issue was you're feeling socially anxious, the eating disorder kind of provides that suppression of those thoughts, because like, no, I don't need to think about the fact that I was socially anxious, because I can just focus on the fact that I didn't really want the pizza, or I was struggling with the pizza. And I think that's something I've never thought about before, in terms of how the eating disorder can kind of just completely distract you from whatever's going on, because you can just focus on the food element.
Exactly. I want to say something controversial. It's terrible to say something this controversial on a podcast, but I actually think that the eating disorder is never the bad guy. You know, it's a socially awkward scenario, and someone comes into the socially awkward scenario and they try to make a joke, and then they actually just make the social scenario even more awkward, and you're like, oh, you should have just stayed quiet, now we are all even more awkward. It's an eating disorder for me almost like that, is that it had a secret mission, it had a purpose from the beginning, whether like what you're saying is that you really needed support in that time, or you needed a distraction from what emotionally was going on, or we know so often that clients were feeling very, very out of control, or literally the act of becoming smaller. I'm in a big family and there's no space, and so I need to be smaller to take up less financial or less whatever it is, space in this family. So I think our eating disorders all had a secret mission. And it was a noble, beautiful mission. It wanted to protect us and keep us safe. We know that an eating disorder is not just about vanity and appearance and looking a certain way. It had a deeper emotional objective. And let's be honest, it did serve you. It wasn't the bad guy. It served you so beautifully. The thing is just, it's a good guy with good intentions, but with poor outcomes. And somewhere along the line, it stops serving you. It becomes greedy. It makes more and more jokes and becomes more and more awkward, until you finally land up with a very unmanageable life. And that's where you are now at saying, like, let me use my eating disorder, understand it, but use better coping skills. Literally, that's what recovery is. Recovery is just choosing different coping skills than this one thing that is eventually going to be very detrimental for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know that you guys have it in South Africa, but have you heard of the movie Inside Out?
Yes. Oh, yeah. What beautiful.
Yeah, like, I think that the anxiety character, literally, when I watched that, I was like, that's an eating disorder. You know, it comes in and it thinks it's doing the right thing for you by protecting you. But what happens is it takes over and then it becomes the only thing that's looking after you because you don't have the happiness coming in or the sadness coming in or have it. It's just the eating disorder. And it is trying to protect you. It's trying to do everything it possibly can and it goes into overdrive. And then I love it at the end when it, you know, they, because I remember my therapist literally saying this to me, you know, welcome the eating disorder in, you know, it can come in, it can go and sit on the couch over there, it can sit and it can drink a cup of tea, but it needs to sit in the corner. And that's exactly what they do with the anxiety is they put it in the corner and it can sit there happily. And sometimes it can be a positive, you know, I think, like you've said there, the eating disorder shows you when maybe things are a bit out of loop because it's saying, you know, oh, you're struggling with food a little bit. Why am I struggling with food? And I wanted to ask you, I guess, with respect to that. So, you know, it's great that you said about like recovery is learning those different coping mechanisms and what the eating disorder serves for you. That's a great concept, but I think that feels like a very big piece. So what is it that you do at Montrose Manor to help people to start to explore, you know, the role of the eating disorder and then how to step away from that?
That's a quite a big question. Now, can we ask you an hour? Of course. I think firstly, let me say this because I think families and people with experiences of eating disorders listening to this, sometimes they want a toolbox. Sometimes they want, if you're in this scenario, this is the tool that you're going to use. I do not know how many parents say to me, but can you just teach us some DBT tools? And I'm like, obviously, yes, I can. But it's actually not what it's about. I think what we try to do at Montrose is offer a very integrated process and program, but with the outcome of teaching you how to think. This is sounding, think is not the right word. To teaching you how to process is maybe the right word. To take the cues from your body, use your DBT tools to pick it up, use your DBT tools to calm it, but then also use your understanding of your life story, using your understanding of your narratives and your core beliefs, using your understanding of your wounding, taking that all into place and going, okay, why was this pizza so difficult for me at the social event? Understanding it in the present, understanding it in the past, and then rather than going like, whenever you have pizza at a meal, do this and this and this, and that is the right recovery way to go, okay, let me think. What would be the right thing for me? What would be the right thing for my recovery voice? What would be the right thing for me for my future? What would be the thing that counteracts my eating? What would be the thing to do to heal my inner wounding? Like, what's the reparenting step here? Or what's the self-esteem step here? So rather than going, 1 + 1 = 2, we say, notice that you've got one, figure out that you've, and have a plan for yourself. Start to, let's go back to Inside Out. Go and sit on that couch anxiety, drink the cup of tea, come back to your senses, come back to your body, feel your heartbeat. Notice what is going on for you, and then ask yourself, what do you need? Because whatever you say to yourself on that chair is going to be the right thing. Okay, now just go do that thing. And it doesn't matter if I, as your therapist, say do this. If you and your heart feel this is the right thing to do, go and do that. So maybe if I'm framing it to you like this, I think Montrose teaches processing, but Montrose teaches a healthier way of living and being, where food and therapy is incorporated, obviously. If the right thing to do is to eat the pizza, it is to eat the pizza. But the right thing might also be to go, I need to phone a friend right now. And that's really your own personal journey. So rather than a whole toolbox, it is a toolbox with insight and wisdom.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a really important thing as well, is that, you know, it's not just about the right thing is not just about the food. The right thing is, you know, about different coping mechanisms, different forms of self-compassion. And I have only just Which sounds so silly to say, but I've only just realised, you know, the importance of slowing down in recovery. Like a lot of the time I would just like in a fast spin washing machine going from one thing to the next. And that just doesn't allow you time to reflect or to tune into yourself, to think about how you're feeling. And so I have been doing some, it's called the psychological sigh. You've probably heard of it, where you like do a really deep inhale and then you take a little bit more breath and then a really long exhale, because I just don't get along with box breathing. I find box breathing so distressing. But the psychological sigh really helps, and I can do the psychological sigh wherever I am, and it's helped me so much when I'm getting caught up in myself and when I'm getting a bit like flabbergasted. I can just kind of do the psychological sigh and then be like, okay, what do we need right now? Where do we need to go with this? And I think that for me has been the biggest part of recovery that I've not done before. I've not done this whole slowing down and actually learning coping mechanisms that work for me. It's always just been coping mechanisms that people have said, this is what you'll need in recovery, therefore this is what I'm going to give you. But actually exploring, you know, what has worked for me and what I need has helped unbelievable amounts in my recovery.
Yeah, I think it links a little bit back to a previous part of our conversation about so we are admitting clients that are very, very ill, which we can't get away from. But I think what you were speaking of for me is to also remember that recovery is a process. Recovery is not just one admission or one therapy session or one set of tools that you are taught. So maybe you are admitted when you are really, really ill, and maybe you need a readmission or a different process, because actually recovery then becomes a lifestyle or a life choice. I'm thinking about a video about a recovering addict that said, being a recovering addict is the very best thing about me. So recovering from an eating disorder is actually the very central point of who you are and what moves you forward. And that is beautiful, but you need to do some work to get there. So you need to be able to step away from the weight. You need to be able to step away from the body. You need to be able to step away from the food. You need to be in a space where you understand yourself and your history and your dynamics to such a degree that you can then do what you are doing now and say, I know that therapists over my lifetime have taught me 20 million things. This is the 20 that works for me. And this is what I need to do. And maybe in a year or two, the psychological side is not going to be important for you. And box breathing might make a sudden miraculous appearance. but I think that's the process that we're speaking of, is that it's not a quick fix, that it's not a little bit of therapy or a few weeks in a clinic. That it is a recommitment to a different way of living.
And ever changing as well. And I actually spoke about this on the podcast last week about how just because one thing didn't work for you before doesn't mean it's not going to work for you now. And we were talking about different treatment modalities, and saying how, you know, for some people CBT can be the best thing in the world, and for others it makes no impact whatsoever. But just because CBT didn't work for you 5 years ago doesn't mean that CBT is not necessarily going to work for you now. So I think it's really having that open mind as well, of being like, I've changed as a person throughout my recovery, and therefore the treatment modalities that are maybe going to be useful for me and the skills that I now need are also going to be different.
If we advocate for a very, I want to say, like, elitist, this is the new magic bullet and this is the thing that's going to work, we actually create a lot of despair. And we go against what recovery is asking of us, because recovery is asking of us to explore, to change, to shift, to transform, to try new things. I have so many clients that come to us and say, this is my last chance. If this is not working, then nothing is... that's actually so sad to hear. Or it's never worked before. Why will this work? Because... actually, when we step into recovery, we are choosing a life of learning and growing and developing. I'm never not recovering from my eating disorder. I'm never not recovering from my childhood pain or my hurt. So to say to someone like, oh, this is the new thing, do this thing and it's going to fix you, is actually selling a false dream, and then actually leaving us with less hope. We need to keep hope alive, but we don't keep hope alive because there's a magic bullet. We keep hope alive because internally we are always moving towards a better version of ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I wanted to ask you about was the rehabilitation side of things. And before which way to do this? I'm just really interested because I know that at Montrose, one big thing for you is giving people life skills and giving people, you know, not only eating disorder recovery, but then those skills to step away from the eating disorder in life. But you mentioned something at the start, which was when people come to Montrose, they feel like they've found their friends and found their family. And then I guess my thought when you said that was, if somebody's gone through their life, and it's very common with people with eating disorders to feel like they've never really fitted in, or they've been an outcast, not really found their community, and then all of a sudden they come along to Montrose and they finally feel like they fit in and they found their people, how do you help people to not only separate themselves from the eating disorder so they can go and live, but then to find themselves within the community as well outside of Montrose?
Both very, very valid questions. And it's interesting because we had a discussion about this literally in the session before I came on the podcast. So why do we have rules, for example, like in our clinic, that you can't wear makeup or you can't wear certain clothes, or, you know, why do we have all of these rules? And there's multiple reasons for it. But the first reason is actually to separate you from your eating disorder, to start to say that there's a you and then there's an EDU and they are not the same. And then even inside of you, there's ways that we edit and change ourselves to fit in with the mold of society. Now, we all need that to a degree, because I can't just walk in and be my normal self in a, you know, like I need to mold a little bit. But we know that people who suffer with eating disorders have molded and changed themselves so much that they are actually not feeling true to themselves. So do we have a physical and a mental illness here, or do we have a spiritual illness where I am so far away from me that I don't even know who I am? So in Montrose, we take away all of the paraphernalia and all of the editing, and we say, just be clean you. We will love and accept you as you are. Let's just come back to who you are. That's a big process. That's a very tough process, because that comes with harsh feedback, where sometimes big thing for our clients will be to intellectualize. And then we will say, no, thank you. I don't want to hear your wise little spiel here. I want to hear you. No, thank you. So clients really have to suffer in order to get to who they really are. But then once they find it, oh my word, that's beautiful. That's lovely. And then what you were saying is, then now I found myself, I'm completely accepted, but now I need to go back into a world that is not going to accept me, and where I need to mold again. And that's where we come back to our previous conversation of learning not just the tools and 1 + 1 = 2, but learning to process, learning to think for myself, learning to think from a recovery mindset, and to start to go, in this scenario, and this happens a lot, maybe I've got a mom that's really very difficult and she's got her own eating disorder behavior. I know that to some degree I'm going to have to step away from myself for self-protection. But then when I'm with my friends and they are my real tribe, then I can just be myself. Or it might be for another client to say, I've realized actually that my friends are not good friends. They only like me for a certain scenario. So then it's empowering the individual to go, let's help you go and look for a tribe that makes you feel like you are worthy and makes you feel that you are accepted. Because if you are feeling worthy and accepted and okay, or if you are aware when you are stepping away from yourself and you are understanding that, then why do I need to invite the eating disorder again in to be my support, or to cover up the fact that I'm so sad, or to be a buddy, or to be a life mission? How many of our clients with eating disorders, eating disorders are great to be self-disciplined and have a goal. Maybe if you can have a goal bigger than that, you don't need the eating disorder. So then it's reintegrating and having these conversations. In our language, we will say finding the middle path, because you can't always just have things as you want, and not everything is Montrose Manor and sunshine and roses and people love you and people are honest with you. But finding a better way of going forward whilst keeping hold of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's so important, isn't it? And it's something that I, until a few weeks ago, hadn't really thought of in recovery, and that so much of it is part of that, like, rediscovery of self. And it's been a big thing for me over the past couple of weeks of actually being like, whoa, you know, without my eating disorder, this is who I am. And you know, I have these interests and these personality traits. But equally, that in itself can be quite daunting and overwhelming to realize, oh my God, like, this is who I am without the eating disorder. And I guess I wondered how, with the clients that you have, you almost encourage them to find themselves, because I think a lot of the time an eating disorder can provide, again, that almost suppression of self. And so often that happens because something has happened in someone's past where they've not wanted to kind of show them their true self, or, you know, be their authentic self. How do you work with people to be okay with expressing themselves in that way?
I think at Mumbra's Manor, also linked to our previous conversations, it's not a one shoe fits all kind of thing. And I think the whole admission and the whole process is about exploration. I can give you an example of, so when our clients are ready for this process, we go on a clothing exposure. And clothing exposure means we go into a shopping mall, and everyone has their goals. So, you know, like, for some it might be like you need to wear less black, and for others it might be you need to have more fitted clothes, and for others it does matter. But oh, that is such a lovely activity and exposure that we do, because the rule is that anyone can give you any item of clothes and you have to fit it on, and we are going to laugh about it and it's going to be fun. And so we will give a teenager this corporate outfit and say, let's play with it, let's make you look like a corporate worker, or let's make you look like a biker chick, or let's make you look like a boho fairy, and let's do all of that and then see what you like, because in the end that is what it's about. So I think we advocate for exploration and finding yourself. We are definitely quite strict and firm on our rules, but within that there's a lot of space to say, who do you want to be, and how do you want to navigate this, and who are you in this, and what is your opinion in this? I also think that's important, is that we all need boundaries and a frame, because if we know that we are safe, then within that frame we can really flourish and fly and be our whole self. So the big thing at Montrose is then for us to create a safe container. A little bit like when you have a toddler in your house visiting, and you go, I will take away all of the glass ornaments, and I'll cover the plugs, I'll make it safe so that within that space you can be whoever you want to be. If you then want to climb on the couch, you can climb on the couch, because I've removed the stuff that I don't want you to do, and I've removed the stuff that is not safe for you. And in that same way, it's creating a safe container within yourself, with community, and outside of your eating disorder, that can then allow you to flourish and to just be yourself. We also need to remember that, I mean, how many of the people listening to this podcast have been in treatment? It's not that our lives before this has been easy. We didn't one day wake up and say, like, oh, my life's a bit boring, can I have an eating disorder? You were unsafe. You were not feeling held and loved and supported for whatever reason. I want to say a person, but I actually want to say the child that is not safe is not exploring. They are protecting. They are bracing. They are doing what they need to do to just survive. So once we are able to make a sense of safety and a sense of non-survival, like of survival, that you will be able to survive, that's actually when we can start to explore who we are. Not when we sit scared and sitting in the corner, when someone is holding our hands and saying, you're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that whole piece about kind of feeling safe is so important, and especially feeling safe to be yourself, because I think that then allows you to explore yourself more and understand the person that you are. And it's really interesting that you bring that up, because last week I was dog sitting, so I was home alone in someone else's house, and normally that wouldn't be something I could do. Normally, you know, a year ago I wouldn't have been able to be on my own, and just because I would get too anxious. And my mum texted me and was like, you've been on your own for a week, like, you need to reflect on that and be really proud of that. And I was like, do you know what? The reason that I've been able to do that is because I feel safe around myself now. I'm like, I feel like my own friend. And yeah, that's something I've never really had, in terms of, I didn't want to be on my own because I was like, well, then I'm on my own and then I'm lonely. Whereas now I don't feel lonely because I've not got the eating disorder niggling in my head saying, this is really unsafe and we need other people around so that you stop doing all of these behaviors. But on the other side, yeah, I'm just hanging out with my friend and I'm happy to be with my friend who is myself. So I think that's such a big part of recovery, is learning to feel safe around yourself and not relying on the eating disorder to feel that safety. Because I think I would often be alone and I would restrict, because that was the only way that it felt safe, was to have the eating disorder with me. And actually now it's, no, I don't need to do that. I can, you know, I had a glass of Prosecco in the bath and I was like, this is amazing. I can't believe I'm doing this on my own, because normally those sorts of things I could only do with other people. So definitely, I think being able to trust yourself and have that relationship with yourself is so important.
Yeah, it makes me think about this whole idea of it's beautiful. And earlier you spoke about like your eating disorder was there to support you. You don't need your eating disorder to support you anymore, because you are there to support you. And I think a lot of treatment processes, sometimes even outpatients, because I really so feel for outpatient teams who are sitting with a client that's not necessarily willing and they're fighting, and a dietitian that just says, oh, just eat, or just do this, or just get your calories up, or just get your weight up. I think for someone who has an eating disorder, the minute that we go, let us remove your eating disorder, there is a panic, because you're taking away this thing that is keeping me afloat forever. There is no way that I'm giving it to you. And I really do wish that treatment teams and facilities would hear this message of like, yes, we have a role and a responsibility to quote unquote remove the eating disorder, but our biggest responsibility is actually to replace life and person and self in that place. I don't know if you've had experience of this, but a lot of people say like, well, the dietitian said I'm going to need to give up my ED, and I'm not giving up my ED. But it's not about giving up your ED. It's about finding life again. For you, a glass of wine and a bath. What ridiculous thing is that? But that's the freedom that it's both the freedom. It's, you know, like it's both the medicine and then the passion and the freedom that you needed. So the answer is in the solution. Does that sound weird?
Yeah. Do you know, I think my perspective, because I definitely, when I first started treatment, was like, oh my God, I've got to get rid of this eating disorder. And I now, I think I've decided that I think we should stop saying to people, you've got to get rid of the eating disorder, because the eating disorder is not like a separate entity to you. It's made up of several different parts of you. And so to say you've got to get rid of the eating disorder is almost you've got to get rid of you. Because to me, it's like an amalgamation of lots of different parts of me. And so actually, rather than saying, I've got to get rid of the eating disorder, it's about, we've got to reshape what the eating disorder is providing you, so that, you know, each of those elements, it still serves you, but it serves you in a more positive way or a more healthy way, you know, rather than, you know, being a belittling bully or that inner, you know, the inner critic is actually really useful sometimes, because it keeps you motivated, it keeps you on board, it gets things done, but maybe it just needs to be toned down a little bit. So I like to see it as like a mixtape sort of thing, in that, you know, I'm still going to keep my inner critic, but I'm just going to tone it down a little bit. And actually the self-compassion, that's super low at the moment, but I'm going to turn that right up because I need more of that right now. And I think within day-to-day life as well, those sorts of things change. Sometimes you do need more of an inner critic to get you out of bed, or you need a bit more motivation and things like that. So it's ever changing each day, but I think it's just having that reframe of, okay, I don't need to get rid of the eating disorder. I just need to dial things out and in a little bit. But like you said before, which nearly made me cry, was you don't need the eating disorder to look after you anymore, because you can look after yourself.
Yeah. I think I just almost want to summarize what you're saying there and just say it's understanding it. So I'll go back to your inner critic and use an example of, say, for example, every night you binge and the binging is, you are feeling so atrocious and ashamed by this binge, and your inner critic is so loud, and all that you want to do is get rid of it. And everyone is telling you, get rid of this. This is so disgusting. How can you not do it? Where's your self-discipline? But if we, say, for example, we start to understand the narrative, and I'm going to make this up kind of an amalgamation of clients, but you were brought up in a house where there was a lot of conflict around the dinner table, and mom and dad was constantly fighting, and all the meals ended up in a screaming match. And the only way that you could survive mealtime was literally to be as quiet as possible and to not eat. And then afterwards, when everyone was gone and gone to bed and the house was quiet with that terrible tension in the house, what you did was you creeped down because you were actually 8 years old and you were very hungry. And by that time, you didn't open up the fridge to eat the lasagna. You opened up the cupboard and ate the chippies and the sweets and that. And now I'm an adult and I'm so angry at myself for binging and how disgusting am I. But if I remember that, hey, this was a little child that was so scared that tiptoed in the middle of the night, that didn't know how to make themselves a sandwich, and then ate everything because they were both emotionally overwhelmed and hungry. Your mixtape example is then such a beautiful thing. If I can then rewind that and go, hey, what part of this mixtape am I playing? This is not a 30-year-old that doesn't have self-discipline. This is an 8-year-old that is scared. So that changes this dynamic, and that makes me understand my eating disorder, which then brings it to what you were saying about now I can reframe it, because now I can say I don't actually need the binge food. What I need is someone to support me in the evenings when I'm feeling lonely and overwhelmed. Or I can say to myself, here I'm now sitting at my adult table and around me is my husband and my children and we are not fighting. So there's no need to go and binge anymore, because actually there isn't conflict. I'm reacting to a childhood wound rather than to the real life experience that is in front of me right now. Maybe that's like listening to your mixtape so many times that you completely get it. And then have compassion over the fact that Aqua's Barbie Girl was your favorite at some sort of point in your life.
Yeah, and now you've moved on and you've got a different favorite song. I think that's brilliant. Yeah, I think it's definitely, you know, there's so much. My treatment in the past has been so focused on food and weight, and only this time around when it's been more focused on the emotions and the inner child and things like that, and really understanding why I lean into the eating disorder, has it helped me to unpick things and then think, oh, it actually makes more sense now as to why I lean into that, and I actually don't need to do that anymore. But that obviously, that does, you know, does take time. But I think it just shows that there is so much hope for people that are going through difficulties with eating disorders. It's just kind of about finding that treatment that works for you in the moment and being able to run with that. So thank you so much for the podcast today, Marlene. Honestly, I think I feel like I've reflected so much myself, but I found that podcast so useful to think about, like, the role that the eating disorder has and, you know, thinking about recovery. So thank you for coming along that journey with me. Where can people go to find out more about Montrose and the work that you guys do?
First of all, thank you so much from my side too. It's really so lovely to speak about this and have a kindred spirit and understanding it. People are more than welcome to go to our website, montrosemanor.co.za, or if they are wanting to reach out, help@montrosemanor.co.za is an email address that they can use to directly access us. We are also very, very open to speaking to people, you know, like helping them on the journey. If you are reaching out to the help for the first time, or you're not 100% sure if Montrose or any other treatment is for you, we are more than willing to have a conversation and to kind of guide you in the right direction as to what is right for you in this process. Because in the end, it's really about creating more awareness about this illness and not letting people suffer thinking that there's no hope.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Marlene. It's been honestly such a pleasure. And really, really grateful for the work that you guys are doing.
Oh, thank you for having us, and have a lovely day. All the best for this beautiful podcast.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.